Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. If you're a ministry leader, pastor, or nonprofit communicator, you've probably felt the ground shifting under your feet in the digital world. Search engines are changing, AI tools are everywhere, and the question a lot of leaders are quietly asking is this: is everything we learned about digital ministry suddenly outdated? Today's conversation is exactly about that. My guest today is David Sudharma. David has spent more than a decade working at the intersection of technology, digital strategy, and ministry. Many of you might know the organization Crew, where David helped lead digital strategy during a period when global online evangelism was expanding rapidly. After that, he moved into the education sector with Arizona State University, where he worked on AI-powered education tools and helped develop systems that improved AI math tutoring accuracy dramatically. Now David works with organizations and businesses, helping them navigate what he calls Google visibility and AI visibility. In other words, how organizations show up when people ask questions online. And that's what this episode is about. Because here's the reality. Millions of people are already asking AI tools their hardest questions. Questions about purpose, questions about marriage, questions about loneliness, questions about faith. If the church is not showing up in those moments, someone else will. So today we're going to talk about why SEO isn't dead, how AI actually learns from the internet, why churches need to start writing content again, and how storytelling still plays a critical role in digital ministry. David also shares some surprisingly practical ways churches can begin using AI today without losing the human heart of ministry. Let's jump in. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be here. It's been a long time, Zach.
I know. We've had you on a couple of years ago now, I guess, talking about Crew at the time. But for our listeners who don't know you or who haven't listened to that episode, can you tell us a little bit about your journey? How did you get connected in this digital space? I want to hear what you've been
doing. It's been a long time. I think I've been around web development, web marketing, digital content, all of that type of stuff. And the longer I go, the more I think of myself as an internet janitor. And so my job is to help clean up the internet. It's what it feels like many days. You and I got acquainted, I think it was probably like 12 or 13 years ago at this point. It's been a long time. And so back when we were both in California still. Mm-hmm. And so I was coming off of having an agency. I was focused on a lot of commercial clients, some in the Fortune 500 space, larger clients. It's kind of, it seems like so long ago in terms of how technology has moved. But sold that agency, moved to Florida, which is where I still am today. And began to help lead digital strategy at Crew, which many people might know as Campus Crusade for Christ. So Crew is a large global ministry for listeners who don't know. And so at the time, this is again about 10, 11 years ago at this point, really focusing in on refining Crew's digital strategy as a missional engagement piece. And so my role there was both as creative director and then moved into chief technology officer, but really focused on kind of the digital mission landscape, which has taken so many leaps and bounds forward today. There's so many different players in this space, so many people that are aligned, trying to reach the world really for two main big buckets, which is evangelism, teaching them the good news of the gospel. And then the second part is discipleship, which is just a fancy way of saying helping people grow in their journey with Jesus. So that was a really exciting period. As that strategy for digital missions continued to progress, I left Crew and moved into the education space. And that was really kind of the world was doing some weird things at the time in 2020, 21. And so I had an opportunity to jump into public education with Arizona State University. So that was a really exciting time for about 4.5 years or so. And similarly, leading technology, ended up in the product and kind of digital strategy space for Arizona State University's K-12 program, which is called the Prep Academy. Got to do some really exciting things in there, including create a curriculum product and curriculum delivery solution for ASU. And then in the last couple of years, it was really focused on leveraging AI, which, again, that emerging at the time was a very emerging technology for generative AI specifically. There had been, of course, other AI technologies before that, but focused on leveraging generative AI to deliver math tutoring capabilities, which was really powerful at the time where Gen AI, this was in the era of GPT-3, I think, maybe a little bit before that, which seems so long ago.
Yeah.
GPT-3's accuracy for math was hovering in the mid 50% range, which, as you know, for math isn't great. Some precision is it's pretty important. 2 + 2 needs to consistently equal 10. I'm just kidding. 2 + 2 needs to consistently equal 4. And it was not doing that. So we were actually able to take kind of that foundational model and through some pretty hefty engineering, got it up to a consistent 90% to 95% accuracy, which is really exciting. Ultimately, the product that we developed ended up winning a Gartner Education Innovation Award, which is really fun. And then got to, through that partnership with OpenAI, we were loosely using, and then eventually transitioned over to Google's Gemini models. Got to present a lot for Google and kind of champion the Gemini tech behind that as well, which is really exciting. So yeah, a lot of exciting work in that space. Got to work and interact with Google's DeepMind team in there, with their Google Cloud team. So a lot of really fun things in the AI space, and then content delivery. Got to do some 3D delivery as well. So yeah, just really exciting time. And then this past July, stepped away from kind of the corporate space, both kind of Christian ministry corporate space, if you will, public education corporate space, and then am now a independent digital marketeer. And so starting to grow in that space, a little bit agency-esque, but I hope doesn't kind of fall into the typical agency space, and stays pretty focused on content strategy, but really for the purposes of Google, we'll call it Google visibility and AI visibility is kind of the space that I'm choosing to play in. So typically people call that SEO, AIO, GEO, all of that type of stuff. So which we'll get more into. Hopefully that's a good fast flyover.
No, that's great. Yeah, it's been fun to, I mean, I've known you since the beginning of that journey. We were working together before you left for Crew. And so it's been fun to watch your career and just develop and flourish and get to be a part of hearing all the things that you've learned through that process and the experience you've gained. And so I'm excited to share some of that expertise with our audience. I mean, this audience.
You've been a huge part of that, right? Through Reliant and our work together with Crew. For people who don't know, formerly the Tiger Creative Group as well, a part of that. So that's, I think that's all been really exciting. And you've been a huge part of the ministry at Crew, as well as advancing and voicing, you know, digital missions and the opportunities for believers to leverage technology, I think, for kingdom purposes. I think is huge.
Yeah, well, thanks. So jumping back real quick, your time with Crew, since our audience is ministry leaders, what were some of the things that some of the digital challenges you guys were dealing with during that time? I mean, AI was at that period probably on the horizon, maybe, but maybe being talked about. What were you guys dealing with on the digital front that were some of the challenges for your team, for what it looks like for an organization like Crew to engage in the digital space where we see so much attention? The church is still hesitant, maybe, might be a good word to use for even engaging in this space. What does that look like for the church? And so what were some of the things you saw working within such a influential and significant player in the ministry sector?
Yeah, good question. I would say that I'll start with kind of the places where Crew has been, had been, was very successful, and I think continues to be very successful, is Crew has such a high volume of content for so many different types of people. And this is globally, this is not just to a US audience, but I think Crew has been so dedicated to creating high quality content, whether it's content around topics like fasting, right, for somebody who's a believer looking to grow in their faith, content that is answering common questions for people who are unsure of what they believe or trying to figure out what they believe, asking common questions. Some of it looks like apologetics, like who is Jesus, right? Is he real? Why should I believe him? Is the Bible actually real? Is there historical accuracy? Like all of those kind of common questions that people who are exploring Christianity might ask, Crew has done such a good job of answering those questions and is very visible on Google and other search engines for that. So I think Crew's done an amazing job of that. I think the challenge has been, and I think to some degree still is, but I think is the gap is starting to close, which is really exciting because technology now exists to close that gap. But I think the gap has been the personalization component, right? Mm-hmm. That is where I think this is a challenge for every ministry, is to say, okay, what's the role of technology and what is the role of a Christ follower to disciple or mentor and engage with somebody on their own faith journey? And I say faith journey very generally because that may or may not be Christ followership yet, right? They're just trying to figure out where they are on this journey. So I think the challenge continues to be personalization, right? So what does that look like practically? Well, somebody might Google and kind of start with a question like, hey, who is Jesus? Does Jesus care about me? What is this concept of mercy? Or, you know, whatever the question might be. And then how does a ministry like Crew, which is so huge, track with that person as they come in and out of touch points with Crew? So digitally, they may come and read an article, but then they may leave, right? How do ministries stay engaged with that person, right? Does somebody call them? Is there an opportunity to give them a call, have a chat message, have an AI reach out to them, right? What is there? There's so many opportunities, and a lot of those are kind of high touch, high involvement, very time consuming. And that's a challenge for a ministry that's leveraging digital strategy because, number one, you only have so many people that can do that work, and your audience is potentially in the millions of people, right? And globally speaking different languages. So I think that is, I think that's a big challenge. But yeah, so I think those are the spaces that are getting easier, but continue to be probably the biggest hurdle.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. That's, as I've had so many now organizations on the show, a lot of them talking about digital strategies and how they're engaging within the space, how to step into that, your audience's faith journey, and where each person is on that faith journey seems to be the big question within the digital conversation. Because the faith journey is unique to every single person who is engaging with Christ at whatever level or whatever step in that journey they're engaging. And so how do we show up in the digital space appropriate to where everybody is in that journey? And it's still something that I think about a lot. I think a lot of organizations are thinking about, and I haven't seen a lot of great answers to it. It's still something that we're figuring out as a church as a whole. But there are a lot of people like you who are a little bit more innovative. And so I think that this conversation is really fitting as we continue to think about that. So you spent your time at Crew, saw some of the challenges there, and were very much a part of leading the organization in Crew's digital behaviors and how you engage with those questions we just talked about, or how you engage with audiences in their journeys, like we just talked about. Then you went to ASU. What were some of the things that were some of the challenges you guys are facing? And as AI, particularly in that phase of your career, was this up and coming thing? What were some of the things that new technology allowed you to answer some of these questions a little bit differently, maybe?
Yeah, there's so many parallels, right? I think between education, not ASU specifically, but I think the goals of education in some ways parallel the goals of discipleship, kind of that spectrum of somebody who does not yet believe is discovering all the way through to, you know, developing, maturing in their faith with Christ. So mm-hmm. I think if we think about the education journey, if you start from kindergarten, right, preschool, kindergarten, somewhere in there, that's a student who really has very little knowledge, right, has very little ability to think critically about the information presented to them. And then you take that journey all the way through to college, maybe into like postdoctorate studies if they go that far. And that journey has some parallels where we're seeing students learn and we're seeing kind of the institutionalized version, right? So whether that's a public school education, private school, homeschool, doesn't matter, but there's some accepted form of learning, if you will, and that arc kind of continues. And then you think about the people along the way. So you might start with a kindergarten teacher. There's one homeroom and one teacher primarily. Mm-hmm. Then you jump all the way to high school and you've got now six or seven teachers, right, interacting with one student, right, kind of subject matter expertise, if you will. You've got your social studies history teacher, you've got your math teacher. And so mm-hmm. they're only able to see a snapshot of that student's journey, right? They don't see the whole thing. They don't see the clubs they're involved in. They don't see home life. They only see them for that 45, 50-minute period at school, right? And then college, very similar, all of those types of things. So your question then becomes, for the teacher, what are the resources that can be given to the teacher to make them the most effective teacher, the personalized to the degree that they can with a classroom of, you know, if they're lucky, 20 students, if they're unlucky, maybe, you know, 200 students, right, lecturing. Mm-hmm. How do they personalize the learning to make it meaningful for that student? I think that's the same kind of question that's being asked. And then yeah. now with essentially all the education is available online, the student can do that. If they kind of lean a little bit autodidactic, they can actually do the entire thing from an AI chat tool. Right? They could go, once they have about a fifth or sixth grade reading capability, if they lean towards autodidactic, which is basically just they can self-teach and self-consume, if they can do that, they can drive their own education journey, which is really powerful, which I think is a big question for education institutions of now that the opportunities for learning style are endless, is kind of the form that had been done for the last 70 years, 100 years, however long it's been running, is that the right form anymore, right? I think that's a big question facing education. So I think there's a lot of disruption happening. One of the indicators that I was kind of sticks out as a marker to me at the time that I was starting the work at ASU around this Algebra 1 math tutor, AI-driven math tutor, that was mm-hmm. the same time that a product called KhanMigo, which is the Khan Academy AI, we'll call it assistant, if you will. So as you study your Khan materials, there's this little AI system that can answer questions for you and interact with you as a student. And it does really well. They've done a great job with that tool. So that at that time, it was kind of like the companion sidekick, if you will, to your learning. Well, in the last 6 months or so, it's all flipped. And what I mean by that is now KhanMigo is still there, but now Khan exists inside of ChatGPT versus ChatGPT playing a side role to Khan. So it's flipped. And I think that to me is one of the big current indicators that education is dramatically changing, and the expectation for AI to deliver that is very, very high. A fun concept we were exploring, we did not deliver this, but we explored it, was this idea of this classroom, which we called the glass classroom. And this classroom, the thought was you could take a listening device, so think of a Google Home or an Alexa or something like that, right? You stick it in the middle of the room, and it is just always listening to what is happening in this classroom. And if you picture a teacher, whether they're roaming the classroom or sitting at the front of the classroom, each kid with a Chromebook, the teacher could walk in and just say, hey, this is what I'm trying to deliver. You type it on their computer on the way to work. Say, hey, today we're going to be learning about, you know, how a ecosystem works, right, in nature. Maybe I'm teaching, you know, life science or whatever. So I'm going to teach a little ecosystem. There's a pond, you know, all of this type of stuff, the cycle there. And they might tell their AI assistant, say, hey, you know what? I really want to teach about frogs on lily pads, right? And how that impacts the ecosystem. But I want you to pull some videos and I want you to make up some quizzes for this. The AI could do that on the fly. And then you could go further and say, and I want you to do that into their Google Classroom or their Blackbot or, you know, whatever they use for LMS and deliver that. And AI could do all of that. So we were imagining that 3.5 years ago. And today, that is very much a potential reality. And then it's listening. And you could have a camera that says, oh, you know what? Let's suggest to the teacher, play a game because you've got, you know, a box full of, you know, ping pong balls in the back. You could pull those and let's pull a game. All of that is now contextually aware. So it knows who the students are by their grade book and their activities. It knows which students are struggling. You can say, hey, that student really struggles with, you know, identifying these types of letters or these numbers. Let's provide them some additional intervention. So all of that now is aware of the student's learning journey, their learning style, the availability of materials, the teacher's capabilities, their strengths and weaknesses. It can take all of that and now deliver a hyper-personalized dynamic environment. So that's what we were exploring about 3.5 years ago. I don't know if anybody's picked that up and delivered it yet today, but the technology, very, very available to do that right now.
Mm. Man, we could take this episode in all kinds of different directions. I'm hearing one on the discipleship journey, like as I've engaged in the ministry space and learned so many of these different ministry models and discipleship models, learned now more recently on the spiritual formation side, the importance of not just, I think for a long time post-enlightenment, the church has relied heavily on just knowledge transfer. And some of the stuff that you're talking about, in the discipleship process, we don't just consume knowledge and then become a disciple of Jesus. That requires a relational aspect and the messiness that comes with that. It requires putting what we're learning into practice in the same way that if I'm going to go be successful in the military, I don't just learn in a classroom what it means to be a soldier. I'm out there practicing. I'm out there developing my skills. Yes, there's a knowledge transfer based element to that process, but there's so much more than that, right? Yeah, in the same way, education, I think, is similar. And some of the stuff you're describing with AI is creating opportunity for that, right? And then I also hear, and this is especially relevant for the church, having cameras in classrooms and watching everything that we do, like you start to go, oh man, this could be a 1984 type situation real quick. And I think that that's part of the fear within the church is how do we appropriately engage with these technologies? I'm under the belief that just like any technology that has ever come before us, this is absolutely something that will be used and already is being used for evil purposes. How do we, as the church and as the bride, if our responsibility is to usher in the kingdom of God here and now and as a future reality, right? This is the kingdom of God is a here and now present reality and something that is also to come. If we're to be ushering the kingdom in every sphere of life, that includes the redemptive work of these technologies. And so in the same way, the church was a big part in using the printing press and how that ultimately had a profound impact on the individual being able to have access to God and his revealed word and what that ultimately meant for the church. I think that these tools, the internet before it, more recently, and now AI, there are opportunities. We can't just as a church say, oh, this is scary and it's going to be used for evil. We're going to step out. This is an opportunity to step in, I believe, and redeem these technologies for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of the kingdom. Like we've already talked about, this this digital Wild West is has incredible opportunity to engage with people where they actually are spending their time and putting their attention. And if we just don't engage and say, ah, this is for the world, then I think it's a big missed opportunity. So we could go in those different directions and have two, maybe those are follow-up episodes, but I want to stay on track. Yeah. I want to stay on track. And make sure that we get to what we want to talk about today with SEO and AIO and the relevance of these things. So you spend your time in ASU, you learn and start incorporating AI into what you guys are doing. What was the reason for the jump back into where you and I were introduced, working together in freelance capacities and working together within our agencies? What caused that jump back? And as you've jumped back into running a marketing agency, essentially, what are some of the challenges you're seeing? What are some of the things that you're learning? How are you maybe taking what you've learned both at Crew and ASU and applying it to the work you're doing with SEO, AIO, all those pieces?
I think there's so many fun things when you think about how the world goes around, right? You've got kind of these big corporations, if you will, but they're not always corporations, just kind of big entities. And you've got small entities, and it is very fun to look at how those things interact with each other. Right, if you compare, you know, a mega church, which I'm not trying to use that in a negative way, just a big church with a lot of people in it, versus a small church or even a house church, how do those two express their ministries differently? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? Because that's always going to be there. And so I think my jump back into kind of a small business focus, so where I am today is I focus much more on small, sometimes mid-sized businesses, but generally small businesses. And even more narrow than that is I focus on local businesses that are focused on not necessarily local to where I am, but just a local market to wherever they are, right? So maybe their business location plus 30 miles out from there. And the reason I like that is because, number one, just from a pure business perspective, I can actually show much more impact for businesses that are locally focused. Number two is the game to play for SEO and AIO, so AI optimization, or you know, they call it answer engine, so you might hear AEO or GEO, which is generative engine optimization. Any of those types of things, the way that you play in that space is different versus if you're launching kind of a general national or global or kind of geography agnostic kind of campaign. So those are very different. So I like the smaller game because it's, number one, easier to play, and number two, higher impact potential. But I think the reason why I jumped over was, number one, very simply, I think God made it clear it was my time to be done with corporate work. So it's kind of a process, a series of kind of events, just kind of clarity from there. So it's all good things. Love the people at ASU and what they're doing. A lot of amazing pioneering work. Very, very innovative. You can read up all about that on the internet. But so a lot of good work happening there. But I really wanted to step into the small business space, but very local. My wife and I work a lot in Orlando, very specifically, and love our city. Feel very called to be a part of influencing and impacting the city for good. And so that's kind of some of that motivation as well. I think what I'm seeing now is, I'll kind of tie it to two things here. Some of it is just general opportunity in the digital landscape, and then some of it is kind of ministry specific or church specific. I think the way that AI engines are optimizing is much more around question and answer. So the format, if you were to think of it, is kind of like an FAQ format. Here's my direct question, and here's my direct answer, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, how does such and such a thing work, right? So it's a little bit less about discussion, right? It's more of, it's almost transactional information gather, if you will. And I think AIs really like that type of format in terms of ingestion. But the way that they express it to the user is often through dialogue, right? So whether you're using ChatGPT or Grok or something from Anthropic, like on the Claude side, or Gemini, or whatever AI you like to use, right? Probably not Siri, because it's so dumb. Anyways, but if you're using one of the intelligent ones, you'll have a conversation with it, but it likes to ingest its information through a Q&A format. So it can become more concrete about its own knowledge. This is very interesting, because when we go to Google and we think of people asking questions like keyword type queries, they're trying to get direct information as fast as they possibly can, right? And so what I really like is when we think about feeding information or optimizing our website or whatever it is that we're presenting for Google, right, which is where the people are. So I kind of replace Google with the people. That's where the people are. Mm-hmm. I really like the challenge of figuring out what is the best way, in essence, I can answer a question so that when people ask a question, I can be the one to raise my hand and say, I've got the answer for you, right? So that's what I'm really enjoying, and that is both for a kind of, we'll call it a traditional Google search, but also for now kind of the age of AI-based searches. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for churches because these engines are tending towards localized information, and that's their attempt to be personal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that game is the same one to play, regardless of what type of business, organization, regardless of the information you have. The localization is a big X factor, I think, for people who are trying to succeed.
Well, so the question I had next, and I think you've kind of already answered it, is there's a big concern that with the overwhelming growth of AI over the last couple of years, especially within the last year, is SEO dead? Is it still relevant today? It sounds like you would say, well, yeah, absolutely, but maybe even more so than it's ever been. Would that be fair to say?
Well, I think SEO has just shifted, right? So I think your information is still relevant. I think the thing that is thankfully going away is kind of the stuff that's kind of in the black hat SEO kind of space, which is, you know, kind of historically people do a lot of keyword stuffing, or they present information that's been presented, you know, a million times already on the internet, like they're just another copy of the same information, or it's very, very self-serving. It doesn't actually present any value. It's really thin, right? It's just here's some stuff, you know, kind of thing. So I think where this shift is happening, and search engines, kind of historical classic search engines, if you will, are making this shift, and AI is certainly starting there, is the usefulness of information. So I think that this shift is actually going to make the quality of content on the internet better. I think it's also technology companies, AI companies, are doing a lot more work to ensure that the content they present back to you is trustworthy. And that can have its negative sides as well, because now we're into information bias and all that kind of stuff. But aside from that, I would say the signals are that they are working on trust signals, and we can go into that if you want, but the trust signals, I think, are a bigger place to play, and that takes a lot more work. So the number of people that actually want to get in and invest in building the trust with the technology, I think it's going to be fewer.
So that trust piece, let's dig into that a little bit, because as I think about AI and so many things that you hear, and I've even experienced this engaging with AI, is that it almost becomes, you hear people developing relationships with these language models, there's also the element that these models are feeding you kind of content that seems to be, how would you describe it? Relevant to your preferences. Yeah. Weird. Directionally informed by your preferences, based on how you're engaging with the technology. So for the for the use case for the church, if we're to show up in the space where people are spending their attention, if more and more people are running to digital to ask their really hard questions, right? What's gone wrong in the world? What happens after I die? How do I deal with my depression and anxiety? How do I function in this, in my marriage? It feels like its trajectory is moving towards divorce. Like, these are really hard questions that people are asking. Certainly. And AI is becoming a thing that we're almost treating like another, in our minds, it's becoming like we're creating another character or another person that we're engaging with. How does the church show up and add that value, like actual value content that is actually answering these questions, and do it in a way that, how do we navigate that, the preferential content creation that these bots seem to be behaving in? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, like it or not, like there's a group of believers, ministries out there that to some degree are trying to run from the existing technology, right? And that doesn't mean that they're, you know, trying to pursue a lifestyle off the grid. That's not what I mean. They're trying to create their own models, train their own AI engines, all of that kind of stuff. And that's worthy and valid work. So I would say that needs to be done. Simultaneously, I think there needs to be a lot more people that are taking the approach of train the trainer, right? Mm. AI has become the counselor, the mentor, the discipler, the apologist. It's become all of those things for millions and millions of people, if not in the billions already, right?
Right.
So if we just pretend like that's not a thing, we're going to miss out on a huge opportunity to disciple, counsel, show mercy, grace, compassion, all of those things to this huge group of billions of people on the globe. So I think there's an opportunity for a local church, for a large ministry, to simply show up by creating content to train the trainer. And that other trainer, so the church training AI, right? Mm. Think of AI as an entity that can be discipled. Maybe think of it as, you know, if you want to take an old school example, pretend it's the Christian bookstore. Put the books on the shelf, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think Christians and churches specifically starting to create content that answers to the best that they can some of these important questions. Churches, pastors, lay people know the questions being answered, or I'm sorry, being asked of them when people come in, right? It's exactly all, it's all the questions that you identified, right? Some version of those, whether it's, you know, I'm lonely, I might be facing, you know, marital challenges, I'm depressed, I don't know what to do with my life, I've lost my job, all and on these problems go. And Jesus wants to show up for them. And the information is available, right? It's not to say replace your discipleship ministry or your mentoring ministry with AI, not at all. But people are asking these questions and they'll never get to you, but they will get to an AI. So show up for them as well, is what I would say. And I think the way that you can do that is by creating, the simple version would be create content on your church website that begins to answer these questions. And Google will pick it up, ChatGPT will pick it up, right? Anthropic will pick it up, Grok will pick it up. They'll find this information and begin training off of it. So when somebody does ask a question, hey, I'm thinking about this thing, if you have a direct answer to that question, your answer is what's going to drive the AI engine in its answer. Let's say begin showing up. So write content. That's just practically speaking, start writing blog articles, fill out that counseling page on your church website, fill that out a whole lot more, give a lot more information there. Don't force everybody to come to a session. Divorce care, grief care, all of those pages that you've got on your church website, fill them out a whole lot more, right? And then we could get into kind of the technicals behind that, but that's kind of the short version.
So content continues to be king in the digital space, it seems. And the AI seems, it sounds like, is what you're saying is functioning very similar to how Google functioned as a search engine before it. That has AI still has to go find something that's already been created. Would you go as far as to say AI is incapable of creating stuff on its own?
I think it can. I think AI is, no, I would not go that far. I would say AI definitely can create stuff on its own. But like everything else, the Bible already says it, right? There's nothing new under the sun. So
right.
It's always, everything essentially is a derivative work of something God incepted. So, you know, so AI is going to be the same way. It's always going to be derivative work, but that doesn't mean it's not original derivative work, right? Original enough to not be called derivative or whatever you want to call it. But I think that's, I think that's kind of where we sit. So I would say, yeah, it's going to come up with new stuff, especially like you identified when prompted in a certain way. It's going to come up with some new, sometimes weird stuff. But yeah, give it the information. So it's got a much better chance of giving people good answers.
Right.
What does the Bible say about this? AI will look for a direct answer if it has it in its knowledge base. But if it doesn't, now we're in the zone of creating things up.
Mm. So this concern over AI removing any relational or human creativity and taking away opportunities for that, it sounds like this is our opportunity to show up and continue to create and continue to have relational influence and present our, whether you're a ministry or just we're talking church broadly, present this creativity that's been hardwired into us, and the identity statements that are given to us already. Like we can, all that relational equity can be inserted into the digital space.
100%. Yeah.
And AI, if we remove ourselves from that, we're leaving it up to just create it on its own, and that's where I think. That's where it gets dangerous. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, I think so. And I also am not one of those people that thinks that your ministry should entirely exist online. I think there's a place for that. And there's some amazing people out there doing online ministry, right? If you want to, whether it's in forums, one-on-one conversations, what have you, it's strictly an online ministry. And that's amazing. But I would say for the majority of churches, it's going to be a hybrid, right? So your ministry with somebody might start online and transition offline, but like many of us, you and I are doing this ministry digitally as well. This interview is happening digitally, right? So we're crossing between physical space, digital space, back to physical space. And I think that's doesn't have to be exclusive. It's the way we communicate, right? But I think as humans, our computer, we're the ones who can have deep and personal connections. God created us to have a deep personal connection and relationship with Him directly. Right? Mm-hmm. He didn't create our computers to do that, even though they like to mimic that, and we could easily fall for it. But that's not their job. That's not the purpose. That's not why we have them. Right? So I think we need to maintain that. My computer can sound like it's praying, but it's not praying.
So, right.
It's uttering words, but it's not praying. And so, you know, but there's amazing capability. I mean, we could go down kind of the creativity path, like with Suno, when you see all the music coming out of Suno, it's unbelievable, right? But I think that's an amazing tool to help human creativity. I sure hope it doesn't replace all of human creativity. That's not what I'd be pushing for. I think, yeah, without going too far down that rabbit hole, I think there's this technology is here, whether you like it or not. Take the opportunity to train it and be a part of training it, right? Put good information on the internet, put great information that helps somebody in their journey so that AI has somewhere to be trained from. It's called training data for a reason.
Interesting. What are some of the more interesting innovations that you're seeing, maybe specifically as it relates to maybe the opportunities that exist for Christian churches for on the local context, like you've talked about for businesses, but also organizations like a crew or ministries that are functioning more on a global scale. What are some of the things that you're seeing that you would go, hey, this is a pretty cool opportunity and a place where an organization could try something a little bit different and maybe be at the forefront of that behavior that a lot of the organizations aren't already thinking about.
Yeah, and this is not new to any degree, right? So I don't know that I have anything specifically novel. I'm watching the technology. The technology is amazing. I'm not entirely sure how to apply some of it yet, but I would say the agentic capabilities of AI, and for listeners that don't know what that means, it just means for the AI to function by itself, make its own reasoning decisions within whatever parameters you've given it, and operate autonomously, right, as we'll just call it as sentient, right? Now it's getting weird. But we'll say that it can do that and can make decisions on a computer and do things. If you haven't seen the movie Tron, the most recent one, to me, that's the scary part of the most recent Tron is actually all of that is possible today. So I think they set out to make it this very like futuristic kind of what if, but it's actually all very possible. So, but anyways, I think the opportunities for the church, the one that I already mentioned, is the easiest low-hanging fruit. Make content, put it on your church website. Google and others will pick it up as a local edition or local version of information it should present to people. That's number one. Number two, I would say, is use AI to free up your resources. Spend the time to learn how to use it to free yourself up. There's so many things you can do for automation. Right? How many emails to the church go unresponded to or don't get responded to for 3, 4, 5, 6 days at a time? And that's not because anybody has bad intention, but that person goes, you know, they're wondering, like, what happened to this email I sent to the church? I had a question. Use AI to help you with that, right? Augment yourself, your staff, whatever, with that. Don't replace people with it, but use it to add capacity. I would say that's one where churches absolutely should be diving into to see what's possible. The other thing too, I would say is, I use AI all the time to answer questions for myself, right? To ask different questions and things like that, where I would say teach the church, spend time teaching the church. There's so many people in the church that are aware that it exists, but don't know how to use it well. Why not be the one to offer that? Why not be the one to say, hey, here's good guardrails you should think about when you're leveraging AI, you know, for whatever it might be, for your work, for your personal, for questions. Be a church that actually offers that, right? Training classes. But I don't see any churches doing that today. I don't see many ministries doing that. I'm sure there are some, again, but be the ones that offer those types of capabilities. And so I think there's all sorts of opportunity out there. But that's kind of a few easy ones that I would point to. And that exists globally or in a very small kind of local context.
Mm. The one that sticks out to me in particular is the automations, the idea of automations and how you can help AI, right, based on some parameters, reason with itself and make its own decisions. What are some of the ways in which you are using AI within your SEO and AIO work to create automations for yourself and for your clients?
Yeah, so really simply, I would say this is the one I use probably practically speaking the most, is I create basically a profile. So this is a little bit about my process. Whenever I bring on a new client, I conduct a client interview, kind of like this podcast episode, right? I get to know them. What do they do? What are their services? What's unique about them? All of that type of stuff. We do that over the course of an hour. And that becomes my client profile. And I drop that into one conversation and dump it into my AI's knowledge. And now whenever I go to build new content, which is a lot of what I do for my clients, and when I go to build new content, I've got that knowledge already stored about who they are, what their preferences are. So my conversation with AI is guided and grounded, if you will, in that client's intentions. Really easy. So if you think about translating that into whatever you might be working on, preload the context, save that context, store it either in a folder or something, right? Save it somewhere. And that kind of becomes a guide for a conversation. So if I have a client, a lot of my clients are in the service industry. So like, I've got landscapers, I've got electricians, and all those types of people. So if I go and to build a piece of content. It's going to build it contextually. It'll mention them by name. It'll say what they do. All of that type of stuff is already done there. That's one really easy way to do it. Another automation I do is I have a tool that I use called Zapier. I've done it also with another tool called N8N, which is a workflow automation tool, but more AI driven. And you can use any of these tools. They all have AI capabilities in them already now. And so I have one that just simply builds, we'll call it micro content for Google business profiles. It just takes that every day and posts it into my client's Google business profile. Helps me a ton, keeps costs way down for them. I don't have to worry about it. I can just look at the end of the day to see how many of them posted. That's done. Now, if you were to take that for a church and think about how do I do this? Okay, you can build a newsletter, right? And you can build a newsletter that had, it's just an idea. You build a newsletter that had some personalization in it to say, maybe you haven't seen them. Maybe you haven't seen somebody at church for the last 6 months. Hopefully it doesn't go that long before anybody reaches out. But let's just say, right? You haven't seen them. It's like, hey, Zach, we've missed you at church. We haven't seen you at, you know, whatever it might be for the last few months. We hope you're doing well. Love to reconnect. If you want to connect with one of our pastors or somebody, your small group leader, what have you, here's your information. AI can handle that like that. Really easy, right? That'd be an exciting way to make it more personal. It would certainly catch my attention, right, if my church started doing that. Those are all kind of the some quick ideas that come to mind. You can have it count all the offering every week for you as well. That'd be a really easy thing to do. Nobody has to be back there counting everything. So simple stuff like that, I think, is ways I would use it. Makes your job 10% easier.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So I want to tie this back into what we kind of tend to focus on within Reliant Creative, the uniqueness of our offering and approach. We've talked a lot about innovations of AI and SEO. We've talked a lot about the importance of ministries to be showing up with educational content, to be showing up answering and stepping into need, answering real questions that people are really asking. That content can lean heavy on the education side. What is the role of storytelling in all of this? Because what I've said for a long time is, when people run to the digital space, especially on the social media side, we are running to these places to veg, to check out, to be entertained. Primarily, our behaviors in digital are to consume story and narrative, right? That's how most people are behaving in this space. Yes, we're going to YouTube to learn how to build a coffee table or redo my cabinets and do DIY projects. Primarily, though, we are running to these places for story and narrative. I think if you listen to this conversation up to this point, it can be easy to go, let's just go create a bunch of educational content and call it quits. Sure. Or good enough. What role does storytelling play in all this? How does the church show up appropriate in digital, contextually relevant to how people are actually behaving? And then maybe support that first touch point, or that first engagement point with some of the stuff we've already talked about, all the educational stuff, all this, the answers to the questions people are asking. How do we make that connection?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I don't know that I have an amazing answer, but as you were asking the question, the thing that came to mind is if you look at the Gospels, so if you just look at the kind of brief snapshot we have, the historical narrative of Jesus's life, right? We'll just, you know, have four different accounts of it, highlighting different aspects of it, right? So that story arc unfolded over the course of 33 years, most of the story in scripture centers on the last 3 years, right? Most of it. That unfolded over the course of 33 years, but yet when we go in and we hear a sermon on Sunday, let's say anywhere between 30 minutes to 2 hours, depending on your pastor, right? So you hear one part of a 33-year narrative, right? So I think of storytelling on the web kind of in the same way, right? So all of it potentially should connect together. If you're a church or you're a ministry, you're telling that whole, I don't know if it's just a 33 year, but let's just say you're telling all 66 books. That's your narrative, right? Or as told through your testimony, whatever the version of it might be, that's your whole story arc, but you're revealing it piece by piece, right? So I think that takes a lot of intentionality. You have kind of a, we'll call that content strategy, which is your big narrative, right? And then you have kind of your chapter version, that is kind of your smaller piece. Maybe that's one page on your website. So that page is useful by itself. It's even more useful in the whole story arc, right? And so I think there's a way that ministries need to begin thinking of the entire arc, and then also thinking about, you know, kind of scene or chapter, you know, whatever it might be within the context of that. Because I think what I think will start to emerge, I'm going to use a local church website for as an example. Most local church websites are just brochures, right? There's a homepage. Here's when we meet. Here's the things available, you know, for your family based on kind of age or life stage, right? That's, and then, you know, here's where our pastors are, just so you know that they're not crazy, right? So that's, well, they might be crazy, but their website makes them look like they're not crazy. So anyways, we'll find out in the news 10 years from now if they were crazy or not. Anyways, that's what we typically see. But that's a really, oh man, how do I say this without being mean? Because I'm not trying to poo-poo the local church websites, but that's a really bad narrative. Like, here's what I do on Sunday and Wednesday. Is that the entire story of my life or the life of my church? I sure hope not, right? Like, there's a lot more to our church's existence than here's what we do on Sunday morning from 8 until 12, and here's what we do on Wednesday from 6 until 10. I hope there's a lot more to the life of the church than that. So tell that story. Tell that story. And I think, practically speaking, if you start there, you go, okay, well, let's tell the story of our kids. Let's tell the story of our, you know, young adults. Let's tell, like, start telling each one of those stories. I think you're going to have a much better opportunity for people to engage, because they can find themselves in that story. How many people come to a church website like, yeah, there's nothing here for me? Actually, there's a ton of stuff. It's just nobody told the story of what was there, right? And I think if we think about that, just telling the story of my local church already is going to be powerful, right? There's so many people living missionally within that church. Their stories, you know, it's not necessarily a testimony, but tell some version of that story so that other people have an opportunity to connect with it. I think that's a really powerful one. And how you write that, there's some tweaks you need to make, truthfully speaking, to win at the search engine game. But I don't think it needs to be so diminished to where it's just you're writing for a robot. No, you're writing for people, but one of the people that's coming in there is a robot. So just don't forget about the robot. That's all. And so, you know, I don't know if that helps answer the question, but that I think is a very simple framework to think about.
Yeah, I think that that's helpful to just reframe how we think about our approaches. I mean, even a simple, say a church is showing up and answering the questions of their local community. Say a local community is, you do a little research and you find that divorce is a big topic in that part of the world, and there's a lot of loneliness and depression, right? If a church is going to create content stepping into those needs, what does it look like to couple that, the answers in that content to those questions with, and here's somebody who has overcome something or gone through something similar, so that when that individual who is searching comes and engages with that content that you've created to answer that question that they've asked, they're also seeing somebody who's experienced this before, who's walked that journey before, maybe is further along in that journey through their relationship with Christ has found freedom in whatever this person is coming to your site to engage with, or the answers to the questions they're finding through your content. So I think there's all kinds of opportunities to inject these opportunities for story and storytelling, whether that's testimony or otherwise, into the content that we're creating, and pair these things together. It doesn't have to just be We do story over here and education and answers to questions over here, and it's compartmentalized. In fact, I think I would argue that these things need to be in support of one another. You talked about Jesus. You talked about Jesus's ministry, and so many times throughout his ministry, I see him engaging with a community first through story and somebody's transformation that has taken place, whether it's the freeing of demon possession or him engaging with the woman at the well and telling her everything that she had, he knew everything about her life.
Yeah.
There was a transformation that took place in those people's hearts. They run out into their communities, testify of what he's done. And the next time Christ comes through those communities with his disciples, those communities are now primed to engage with the educational side or the instructional side of the gospel. And his teaching. So he's constantly creating opportunity for story and transformation to prime the content, if you will, that he wants to present. And I think that we can use those same behaviors within our digital approaches, and it doesn't have to be overcomplicated. These can be pretty simple. I think that there are some pretty simple, easy answers to some of these questions. It seems daunting. The digital space is still something that I think seems daunting to most of the ministry space. It to me becomes a question of, hey, let's just get in the practice of doing this. Let's make this a normal rhythm of our congregation, of our ministry, of our organization. And as we put these things into practice and test things out, then we can introduce innovations. We can try things that are a little bit different. We can bolster up a foundation that we've built because we've gotten in a consistent flow of generating helpful content and answers to questions that people are asking. So
I think there's some fear because the internet is so public, right? Mm-hmm. Anything I put on can, you know, potentially be accessed by anybody in the world, right? So I think there's some fear around that. But I'm going through the book of Matthew in my own study time. I'm just kind of following along with where my church is going through Matthew. And we're not there yet as a church, but I know that that Jesus answers the question. This is like such a great narrative. He's got this section, right, where he says the kingdom of heaven is like, and he tells it multiple times, right? And mm-hmm. he's got all these different versions, just basically mini stories. Kingdom of heaven is like this master who has a slew of employees that come to him from, you know, 12 o'clock till I think like 10 o'clock at night, and they all get paid the same. Like, that's amazing storytelling, right? Like, he's got so many different versions of the kingdom of heaven is like. And I think of that for a church, my goodness, it's not necessarily the kingdom of heaven is like, but the love of Christ is expressed like, fill in that blank for your church, right? The compassion of Christ, the gospel demonstrated is like, you could tell endless stories within your church, right? How it is like. And I think those are simple narratives, right? It doesn't have to be direct answer of like, what is the kingdom of heaven? Well, according to Merriam-Webster, the kingdom of heaven is blah, 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 right? Like, no, this, and there's so many different sides of it to explain. So I think, yeah, that story side, huge. There's some learning to be done for sure there, but I think that is that's a big opportunity.
That's good.
I love it. Well, Zach, we could keep going. There's so many, like, if you want to follow mm-hmm. this up with practical tips, like here's how you actually write the thing, I think we're going to put some of that on the Reliant website, how you actually do the thing. For the people, but this is kind of it's like the background of how it gets started.
No, this is good. Well, and I really appreciate you coming on the show again and sharing your expertise and your insights. You obviously have spent a lot of time in this space, and this has been helpful. Hopefully it's been helpful for our audience and ministry leaders. If people want to get a hold of you, learn more about what you're doing, how can they find you?
It's easy. You can find me through Reliant. That's one of them. But you can also just find me online. You can either just look me up on social media. It's very easy. Find my first name and last name. I'm the only one out there with that combo. and then you can also find my website, which is just Sierra, Sierra.host. And you can find me there. Text me.
Awesome.
Shows up right here. I'll answer you right back.
So, sweet.
Thanks a bunch, Zach.
Yeah, it was good to have you. Thanks for coming on the show, David.
Of course. Bye.
Bye. Hey, before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one simple thought from today's conversation. The internet is not going away. AI is not going away. And people are already using these tools to ask their deepest questions. Questions about identity. Questions about suffering. Questions about God. The question for ministry leaders is not whether these tools exist. The question is whether the church will show up there. David made a powerful point in this conversation. AI systems are trained on the information available on the internet. That means the church has an opportunity right now to help shape what those systems learn. If churches begin creating thoughtful content that answers real questions with wisdom and grace, that information becomes part of the digital ecosystem people encounter every day. And that matters. Scripture reminds us in Ecclesiastes 1:9, the thing that has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Technology changes, but people's questions do not. People still long for purpose. People still long for hope. People still long for redemption. And the church still carries the message of Christ into those spaces. So the opportunity before us is not a retreat from technology. It is to steward it, to use every available tool to tell the story of what God is doing. In today's conversation, edit here, Jim. If today's conversation was helpful, here are two simple next steps. First, subscribe to the Ministry Growth Show, wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps more ministry leaders discover these conversations. Second, share this episode with a pastor or ministry leader who's trying to figure out how to navigate the digital landscape. These conversations matter, and the more we learn together, the more effective our ministries can become. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time on the Ministry Growth Show. All right, and Jim, there is an edit in that outro, so make sure you pay attention to that. Also, within the actual interview with David, there's a gap that I need to cut out, and I communicate the edit in that recording. So make sure you pay attention to those two edits as you work through this. Thanks, buddy.